the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. Over the last few weeks, we have covered Social Security and Medicare. And for those turning 65, Medicare enrollment begins October 15th. And we want to cover some issues on this program, of which you need to be made aware, especially in the area of Medicare or Medicare Advantage and the differences between the two.
And John, before we get to that, let's talk about some basics first. There are two parts to Medicare. There's Part A and B. Part A is hospital insurance. It helps pay for inpatient hospital, home health, skilled nursing facility, hospice care. And Part A is provided free of premiums to most eligible people. The premium you're going to pay on Medicare is not for Part A. The premium you're actually paying is Part B. Now, Part B pays for a physician, outpatient hospital, home health, and other services. And to be covered by Part B, all beneficiaries must pay a monthly premium. And as we've covered on previous shows, those premiums could be as low as $109 or over $400 because there are now four tiers of pricing on Medicare based on your income. Then there is also called Medicare Part C, and that's the third part of Medicare, and that is basically Medicare Advantage. It was established in 1997. It was modified in 2003. Now, the Medicare Advantage program expands beneficiary options for participation in private sector healthcare plans, which is one of the reasons it's very popular with seniors. And then finally, there is Medicare Part D. And Part D is what helps pay for prescription drugs not otherwise covered by Parts A and B. And for that, you're going to pay an additional premium.
Okay, well, we've outlined it then. Let's just go ahead and dive in.
All right, there's basically two main choices an individual who qualifies for Medicare can choose from. Number one, you can choose the original Medicare, which is Parts A and B. Or two, you can choose Medicare Advantage, which is Part C. So let's go through the steps that you are going to have to go through if you are going to be signing up here with that date starting October 15th. The first step you have to go through is which way are you going to go with Medicare? Are you going to go with the original Medicare, which is Parts A and B, Part A hospital, Part B physician services, or are you going to go with Part C, which is Medicare Advantage? And if you're going to go with Medicare Advantage, are you going to go with an HMO or a PPO? And usually that is combined with Part D. Now, step two is going to be, are you going to go with Medicare Part D? In other words, are you on some kind of medication or a series of medications? You could be taking medication for diabetes or, let's say, statin drugs for cholesterol or drugs for, let's say, blood pressure. So there are a number of items that you have to choose from, and that's what you're going to have to decide. Are you going to go with traditional Medicare or Medicare Advantage? Now, the basic reason a lot more individuals have been turning to Medicare Advantage are three reasons: coverage, cost, and convenience. And I want to get into these just briefly, and we'll get into more detail a little bit later. In terms of coverage, Medicare Advantage plans, at a minimum, cover everything offered by traditional Medicare Parts A and B. But they may also offer additional benefits not covered by traditional Medicare, like dental care, hearing, vision screening, prescription drug programs, and other services that would otherwise have to be selected under some form of supplemental insurance program. Now let's talk about cost. While getting extra coverage benefits, the enrollee's out-of-pocket costs are likely to be less with Medicare Advantage plan than if they choose a traditional Medicare and a Medigap policy. Everyone in a Medicare Advantage plan must pay the same monthly premium as those enrolled in Medicare Parts B. So if it's $109 or $400, depending on whatever your tiered bracket is, you're going to pay the same amount. From that point, an enrollee's cost will depend on the benefits provided by the Advantage plan. There are some plans that don't require an enrollee to pay an extra premium, but they have deductible and copayment requirements. Other Medicare Advantage plans may charge a premium, but have lower deductibles and copayments. So, in addition, Medicare enrollees should also compare each plan's out-of-pocket minimum costs. Very important, because those out-of-pocket costs, that comes out of your wallet. The most an enrollee who stays within the plan's network can pay for out-of-pocket. There is no cap on out-of-pocket expenses for someone who chooses the original Medicare Parts A and B. However, Medicare rules limit medical and hospitalization to $6,700 per year for Medicare Advantage plans. And of course, that goes up a little bit each year. Convenience. Medicare Advantage plans offer more convenience than traditional Medicare, Medigap, and Part D coverage. And here's the big convenience. By having all health coverage under one umbrella, an enrollee doesn't have to worry about coordinating benefits between different plans, providers. All the statements and bills will come from one source. As with anything else in life, Medicare Advantage plans may not meet all of your needs because the Medicare Advantage plans are different by state and by area. So it's very, very important. Now, here's some interesting statistics. According to the Kaiser Foundation, as of 2015, 69% of those enrolled in Medicare are enrolled in the traditional Parts A and B, with roughly the other almost 31% of beneficiaries enrolling in Medicare Advantage. And by the way, since 2004, the number of beneficiaries enrolling in the Medicare Advantage plan has tripled from 5.3 million to 16.8 million. And by the way, you can change that every single year. So if you signed up for A and B and you decide and find out that the Medicare Advantage program would be more beneficial to you financially or covering what your particular medical needs are, then you're going to want to make those change. Just like, for example, if you are under Medicare Parts D, as you know, every single year, insurance companies under these plans are known for changing the drugs that they cover. What you may not know is every single year you can change the company you use to cover your drug prescriptions. And doctors do this every single year. And the insurance companies, they do this. There's a little game they play. The insurance company will take a look at, gosh, we're spending a lot of money on this drug. So guess what? Next year, we're not going to pay for that. So what you do is you just simply find another insurer that pays for that drug.
So there are different than Medicare Advantage programs from HMOs to PPOs, and this is where it starts to get confusing for people again. So why don't we cover those?
Yeah, an HMO, as everybody's aware, is a managed care that provides to its members who are also Medicare beneficiaries either directly or through an arrangement with others, at least all the Medicare-covered services that are available to Medicare beneficiaries who are not enrolled in the HMO, who reside in the geographic area serviced by that HMO. Some HMOs also provide services that are not covered by Medicare, either free to the Medicare beneficiary that is funded out of the payments they receive from Medicare. So before you consider enrolling in an HMO managed care plan, you really need to find out whether the plan has a risk or a cost contract with Medicare. There's an important difference. Risk plans, these plans have lock-in requirements. This means that the beneficiary generally will be locked into receiving all covered care through the plan or through referrals by the plan. In most cases, if the beneficiary receives services that are not authorized by the plan, neither the plan nor Medicare will pay. The only exception that is recognized by all Medicare contracting plans is for emergency services, which the beneficiary could receive anywhere in the United States. The other difference, cost plans, these do not have lock-in requirements. If the beneficiary chooses to enroll in a cost plan, they can either go to a healthcare provider affiliated with the plan or go outside the plan. If the beneficiary chooses to go outside the plan will probably not pay, but Medicare will pay its share of the charges that it improves. So it's really important that you will be responsible for the Medicare's coinsurance, deductibles, and other charges, just as if they were receiving care under a regular Medicare program.
Okay, what about PPO plans then? I mean, these seem to be the ones that are popular behind the Medicare Advantage plan.
What you're talking about is preferred provider organization, and these preferred provider plans refers to physicians, hospitals, and other healthcare providers with whom the health plan has established a contractual agreement for fees. PPOs generally permit a beneficiary to see both in-network and out-of-network providers. And in contrast to HMOs, enrollees do not have to choose a primary care physician. And according to the latest Kaiser Medical fact sheet, local PPOs will account for 23% of all Medicare enrollees as of 2015. Now, a Medicare PPO plan is offered by private insurance companies, just like you got, either through work or if you had your own business. However, Medicare pays a set amount of money every month to the private insurance company that provides the health care to Medicare beneficiaries who choose a Medicare Advantage PPO plan. There are two types of PPO plans. They are regional preferred organizations. These are plans that serve one of 26 regions established by Medicare. They may be a single state or could be a multi-state area. Or two, it could be a local preferred organizational plan. These are plans that serve the counties the PPO plan chooses to include in its service area. So these plans, these PPO plans, can vary by Medicare service areas. So that's very, very important that you understand that if you are going to go the Medicare Advantage route.
So at this stage of the game, what we should do is sum up the steps that people have to go through. I need to ask you about, what about people who come into re-enrollment? Can they make changes in these plans too? But let's do the steps for now.
Okay. Step one, which is decide on which type of Medicare you're going to get. Are you going to get the original Medicare, which is parts A and B, or you're going to choose B, which is Part C, which is the Medicare Advantage program. Most likely, you're going to end up in either an HMO or a PPO, preferred provider organization. Step two is you must decide if you need Part D of Medicare. And most people will end up doing this, John, because sooner or later, as you age, you'll probably end up taking some form of drugs. And as you can know, whether it's statin drugs, blood pressure drugs, things for diabetes, or things that we fall into as we age, that can be quite expensive. So you're going to have to, in step two, decide if you want Part D, because the choices are Medicare prescription drug plan, that's Part D, or you get a Medicare Advantage plan that has drugs included. That's an MAPD plan. That's Medicare Advantage with prescription drugs included in the Medicare Advantage plan. Now, step three is you must decide if you need supplemental coverage to the original Medicare. Because note, if you joined Medicare Advantage plans, you do not need supplemental medical or what we call Medigap insurance, because it's included in the Medicare Advantage plan, which is why it is so popular. Because if you go through the regular Medicare plan, parts A and B, chances are you're going to go with D, which is drug prescription. So you're going to have one insurer that covers your Medigap insurance. That's going to cover the parts that Medicare doesn't cover, because Medicare only covers about 59% of your coverage. Then you're also going to have to find somebody on Part D who's going to pay for your prescription drugs. And I've had a lot of my clients complain to me that it's such a hassle with these insurance companies, because what happens is every single year you're on one drug for a statin drug or a blood pressure medication or whatever you're taking. And then all of a sudden at the beginning of the year, they change everything and they're saying, nope, we're not going to cover that. And you find that out when you renew your prescription, you're paying $10 or $20 for the prescription. All of a sudden it goes to $80 or $100. And I've had clients tell me it can go up to $300 depending on what you're taking. So you have to decide whether, if you are on Part A and B, the regular Medicare, who your Part D insurer is going to be and who's going to cover your Medigap insurance. The problem is these things change every single year. Now, Medicare, and here's the thing that you have to be aware of, and we've been warning and telling you about this. If you are doing retirement planning, your out-of-pocket expenses are going to be $260,000 over the life of your retirement. That's going to be your Medicare premiums, your Medigap insurance, and the things that you cover out of pocket, whether they're prescriptions, certain services, certain tests that you want done. And we're going to get into this with my guest, David Sion, who spent almost 30-something years with HSS Home Health Services with the government on the future of what's coming to Medicare and Medicaid. And just a heads up, over years, as these costs go up, the government is going to end up covering less and less of your medical expenses, and you are going to end up shouldering the burden, because Medicare is the fastest area of growth within the government's budget. Medicare spending has grown 14-fold in the past three decades, from $37 billion in 1980 to almost $650 billion in 2015. So, and the CBO projects by the year 2021, spending on Medicare will be equal to almost 4% of GDP, and is projected to grow at a rate of over 6% a year. And if you are heading into retirement, let me tell you, forget the Fed's inflation numbers of 2%. You are more likely to experience 6 to 8% inflation rates for medical cost and medical expenses in retirement versus what you're spending on everything else. And it's interesting, because there was a recent piece that came out in the American Journal of Law and Medicine, and they were talking about Medicare pays 59% of the average healthcare cost. And according to their study, the average married couple is spending $8,000 a year. So that's why it's really important. It's one of the reasons this is going to be a very important decision. And if you are doing retirement planning, it is going to behoove you to work with a financial advisor, unless you are very well schooled on when to take your Social Security, how to set your Social Security up. Should you delay taking your Social Security if you have other means that could set yourself up, and let's say your wife, who's most likely to survive you, for the best benefits? Because remember, when one spouse passes away, one Social Security check goes away. The survivor gets to choose between, let's say the wife is the survivor, can choose between her own Social Security or her husband's. Likewise, when you go into Medicare, whether you're going into traditional Medicare A and B, or you're going into Medicare Advantage, what you choose, whether you go to Medigap insurance, where you choose a Medicare Advantage program that's an HMO or a PPO, you really need to do your homework, because, folks, I'm talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars. And if you are in the upper tiered income group, I'm talking about close to $500,000 out of pocket expenses for Medicare premiums, Medigap insurance, and out-of-pocket expenses. And we're not even talking about long-term health care, John. So all of this can strictly run into a lot of expenses. And one of the things that came into play with Obamacare in 2010 is they are gradually reducing payments for Medicare Advantage. And so Medicare Advantage itself, even though it is becoming more popular and it's up almost three or four fold since 2003, you could see benefits that Medicare pays to these private insurance plans be reduced, in which case you're going to end up, it's hard to say how that will change, whether you end up having some kind of supplemental insurance, because right now you're not supposed to have it. So there's a lot of important decisions that have to be made here, and it would behoove you to take the time and study them and talk about the consequences that you would face as you get into retirement.
And this is one of the issues that you're going to be discussing with David Sion, discussing the future of healthcare. He spent over 30 years with the Department of Health and Human Services. So I think it's something worthwhile, because things are going to be in a constant state of flux, which, by the way, Jim, makes it very difficult to plan for retirement, because every year things will be changing. You can't just set it and forget it.
It's one of the reasons, John, we're covering a lot of this in our investment strategy conference in October, because we have a major tax law change that stands a good likelihood of being passed that could impact if you are running your own business, a proprietorship, a partnership, a C-corp, or a sub-S-corp. It could change dramatically. And some of these things that are coming out that are going to be changing, not only in Medicare Advantage and Medicare itself and Medicaid, it's one of the reasons why they're having such a battle in Washington, because it is the biggest and fastest form of growth in government spending. And it's why by the year 2021, we are going to have some form of entitlement crisis, either dealing with Social Security, just as we did with the Social Security Disability Trust Fund. That was why they took away a lot of the benefits to surviving women in Social Security when they passed the budget bill in 2015. So there's a lot of horse trading that's going on here. And don't think for a minute it's not going to affect you if you are heading into retirement or currently retired.
So again, tomorrow on the program, David Sion will be discussing the future of healthcare from the inside viewpoint of having spent much time in the government in that area. Time for our real life case study. This is a hypothetical illustration based on real life examples. Names and circumstances have been changed to protect those involved. And we have slides online at financialsense.com, which are going to illustrate the points which Jim is making. So take it away.
This week, we're going to talk about the case of Pete and Linda Ellis. Pete is 64, Linda is 56. Both would like to retire in 3 to 4 years. Based on our health questionnaire, which we do in every single plan, and you should be doing this, by the way, if you are having a retirement plan, because medical expenses next to taxes are going to be your biggest expense. Peter's life expectancy is age 88. Linda's age 90. Their risk tolerance is moderate. And just a little color, Pete is a civil engineer. He's been with the same company for many years and has thoroughly enjoyed his line of work. Many of his close friends have recently retired, which has made him consider the prospect of retiring soon. After all your work buddies are retiring, why don't you retire? Pete likes the idea of working for at least a couple more years, given that they both are healthy, happy, and in comfortable positions at this time of their lives. Pete's primary concern is how to handle the cost of health care, with him becoming eligible for Medicare in a couple of months. Linda is a small business owner. Linda is much younger than her husband, but is considering whether or not they should retire early in order to do the things they want to do while they're still young, especially travel. Linda is concerned about potentially high medical costs, given that she is on her husband's medical plan and isn't sure what to do if he retires, because then she's going to have to cover those medical costs herself. Linda is also concerned about potentially running out of money, given her longer life expectancy and the age gap between her and her husband. She's also excited about retirement and wants to make sure they're going to be able to enjoy their lifestyle. Their risk score, they're a little bit more aggressive given their age, and especially Linda's age. Their current risk score is 6. Their portfolio risk is 7. So pretty closely matched between risk and where they're invested. What was important to both of them is not outliving assets, maintaining a lifestyle, and making the best decision on medical insurance. And this affects a lot of you listening to this program. When you think about it, let's say that you're on your husband's plan. In this case, what do you do? Let's say Linda is on Pete's medical plan insurance at work, so she doesn't have to carry medical insurance because she's on Pete's. What happens if Pete retires and goes on Medicare? She's not eligible for Medicare. So it's a big, big decision that many couples have to face. Their essential budget was $92,000 a year, about $38,000 in discretionary, roughly $130,000 of expenses. Pete's salary, $132,000. Linda's salary pulling out of the business, $55,000. They had roughly a surplus of $57,000. In retirement, that budget would go down to $87,000 for essentials, $40,000 for discretionary, roughly in the same category, about $127,000. Their combined Social Security eventually would be $36,000. Pete's pension from his company would be $45,000. They have rental properties, which would be producing $25,000. They would have a shortfall of income of $34,000. Their primary residence is $480,000. They have two rental properties of $330,000, of which they owe $142,000. Pete's retirement assets are $275,000. Linda's retirement in her SEP is $361,000. Joint accounts are about $100,000. And in cash, they had $40,000. So total investments, roughly close to $800,000. Total assets of about $1.6 million. The main decisions that we had to face was managing healthcare costs until they both could qualify for Medicare, especially given their age difference, creating enough income for lifestyle, and minimizing risk of outliving their assets. What we did is we went into more of a dividend-based account, a little balance with some fixed income, producing roughly a little over 3% income. That produced $23,000, almost $24,000 of income, giving them a surplus of roughly $2,600. One of the reasons we wanted to go in dividend income was the reason that they only had a surplus of $2,600. So they had to have, given Linda's age and the difference between them, they had to have something that was going to cover increasing costs, because they could be living fine right now with a slight surplus. But we usually like to see a larger surplus. And if we don't have that surplus, there's only a couple things you do. You work longer, save more, or you have to have something in your portfolio that's going up in value. Now, what we did, given that Pete wanted to continue working for his company with a great employer plan that his wife was on, we recommended that he delay Medicare until he retired. This would keep their medical costs lower for a longer period of time, especially for Linda. Upon retirement, Pete would then use Medicare, and Linda would need to find an individual policy until she herself would qualify for Medicare. To maintain the lifestyle, we advise Pete and Linda not to make any major purchases like home remodels or expensive trips while still working, because we wanted them to build up their portfolio a little bit more to increase the cash flow and have greater assets at retirement. We also suggested that Pete and Linda update their portfolio asset allocation to reduce market risk, as we're getting late in the business cycle and also late in the economic cycle. Focus on increasing cash flow from their rental properties. This meant making some changes and lowering the cost in order to increase their net rental income. We suggested, and they basically told us that they didn't want to keep these rentals forever, so we suggested that they go with a 10-year ARM where they could reduce the interest expense substantially, which would also increase their cash flow. So here, John, we are delaying the medical because Pete wanted to still work. Linda wanted to stay on Pete's plan, and they still needed to build up their assets and also keep Linda on Pete's medical plan for as long as possible.
As I'm listening to you know, Jim, the one thing that really strikes me is what a minefield this whole thing is. And life's gotten very complicated, you know. Unfortunately, that's just the way it is. It's not going to go away any time in the future. And I don't think Congress is going to help us. I think they're going to hinder us, to be honest with you. the direction that we're going with everything. But that's why we do what we do here, to try to help people navigate those minefields. And what are the minefields we're going to be walking through in the next couple of weeks?
We're probably, John, we're following as we did on the weekend where we covered the tax reform bill, because this is going to impact so many families, individuals, and businesses. We're going to cover the tax planning under the different proposals that are being submitted in Congress. We're paying close attention. We have a supplemental service and research organization we subscribe to that has a beat on Washington, what's working its way through the subcommittees, the different parties, what's being proposed, who's against it, who's not against it, the probabilities, how this impacts various things. So we're going to be talking about tax planning under the Republican tax proposal and how that's going to affect you, your retirement, and you individually or you as a family. We'll be talking more about that in the weeks ahead. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.